Accession number 28701, real one.
Mrs. Anne Wallace, real one.
My name is Mrs. Annie Wallace. Got it again.
That's all right.
Yeah. My maiden name was Duffin, and I was born in Henniker Mews, Chelsea, on the 18th of the 1st, 1924. I had two brothers and one sister. Because we suffered a rather bad health as children, they asked my parents to try and move us to the country, which we did. We moved to Essex, and we were brought up in Essex until the war came. And I was 16 by then. I used to travel up to East Ham to a job. I can't remember the name of the actual firm, but it was something like a British Home Stores store. We used to travel from Leyndon Station up to East Ham. During that time, the bombing was going on in London, and the planes that didn't drop their bombs in London would drop them on their way back over Essex. And I could remember my mother and I, every morning we used to have to shine a torch for the bus to stop to go to the station. And this particular night there was rather bad raid in London, and the planes were coming back and they were dropping bombs on the way. And the funny thing was that we both put our hands over our faces and put our heads down towards the hedge, as if we thought that the bombs weren't going to hit us if we did that. And I can always remember we were in an Anderson shelter at night, and remember singing to my brothers and sister, because they were much younger than I was, and to keep them happy I used to sing these all the songs that I could think of. But after a while, because my father was working in a hospital in the East End of London, my mother got very unhappy being down there, so she found a house next door to her sister in Putney in London, and we moved back there. And then I worked in John Barker's in Kensington, and from there I joined the Women's Auxiliary Air Force.
What was the feeling like in your family when there was talk of war?
That's something I should have really said to you. It happened on the Sunday morning, and it was a beautiful day. We lived in Essex, and my mother got all four of us and walked up to my auntie's, and she was crying her eyes out, because thinking of the First World War, she, you know, didn't like it at all. But you know, then after that, well, you know, like everybody else, you just got on with it. Just got on with your life, you know.
Listen to the wireless.
Yes, yes. We used to, because there was no television in those days, and it was mainly the radio that we listened to. But
how did it come about? You mentioned that you joined the Women's Auxiliary.
We knew that we were going to have to either join a service or go into a factory, and I didn't relish the idea of working in a factory, so decided before I was called up at 18 to join the Women's Air Force because I rather liked the idea of being in the Air Force. My father said he wasn't going to let me join, and I said to him, well, if you don't let me join now, I shall join when I'm 18 and you won't be able to do anything about it. Because the same thing happened to him when he wanted to join the Navy in the First World War. And his sister and mother kept tearing his papers up. So he didn't try to tear mine up, he just let me go in the end, because he knew it would happen anyway.
Would you like to describe how it did happen and what took place?
Well, I actually saw this advert, you know, they were asking you to join, and I decided, well, the WAF would be the one that I'd like to go into, and just went along to Holborn, I think it was, that I joined, and had a medical, and, you know, they ask your details, and you know, that was it. It was about a month afterwards that I got the papers to say, come to Gloucester. Innesworth Lane in Gloucester was the first place. We were only there a week. And I think we were kitted out with our uniforms and everything. And then we were sent to Morecambe for 2 weeks. And then about, I suppose it would be about 4 o'clock in the morning, we were posted to RAF Wheaton, and it was very, very cold, very cold. And in those days, I didn't eat very much, and did a silly thing and never had breakfast, and of course, didn't feel very well one morning, and we were sent for a special breakfast and told not to do it again.
What was the special breakfast that
a cooked breakfast, which normally I never ever ate a cooked breakfast, but we were told we had to eat breakfast.
That would be eggs and bacon, would it?
Anything you could go, porridge, and I can't remember other cereal, I can only remember the porridge. And then we used to have these big trays of eggs and bacon and sausage and kidneys and all that sort of thing. We were very lucky, really, because we were looked after really better than outside. But I never ever went without my breakfast again. And I remember at Wheaton, we had terrible snow that they had to come and dig us out of our hut, because we were in huts on the camp with about 30 beds in. And we used to even wear our dressing gowns in bed because it was so cold. And as I say, they used to come and dig us out of the hut. But there we did all our square bashing, running to march, and they used to keep us. Sometimes, if there was a commanding officer coming to inspect us, they'd get us out on the parade ground for about 2 hours before he arrived, and we were used to be frozen. But it toughened us up.
What would you like to describe your uniform?
It was the Air Force blue, quite a nice material. I remember when I got mine, but I was very small in those days. I was only just over 6 stone, and they couldn't find a uniform small enough. And I used to always have to have mine altered because I wasn't very big. It was quite smart. The hats are not like they are of today's Air Force. They had like a shiny peak cap with the Air Force material in the middle and the RAF badge. We didn't have WAF badge on it, it was RAF on it. because a lot of people since then have said, you know, that there used to be a Waffen and it wasn't, it was RAF. So,
was there a summer and a winter uniform?
No. We just used to have to roll our shirt sleeves up short if it happened to be, but we weren't allowed to go around without a tie. And you had to wear the stockings that they gave you, which were quite thick in those days.
Even in the summer?
Even in the summer.
What colour was the tie?
The tie was black. Just plain black. And they were like a pale blue shirt, and you wore them just like a man. But they always looked nice. They always looked smart.
Was there an overcoat for the winter?
Yes, we had a big overcoat for the winter, and we also had, I can't remember what they're called now, they were like a big mac. If it was raining, there is a name for them, but I can't remember what it is, and that we used to put over if it was raining. Incidentally, when we did our when we were at RAF Wheaton, and we did our training, and we did our marching. Oh, that was something, I'm getting mixed up actually. That was something I got mixed up with, because I went back to Blackpool again, because Blackpool was only 5 miles from Wheaton, and we used to go into Wheaton on our time off, go to the pleasure beach and things, and spend what little money we had, which was £2 a fortnight.
And was that on the bus? Did you go by bus?
By bus, yes, at the camp. In actual fact, that's where I met Bill. But I'd have to get back to the second time I was at Blackpool to tell you about the marching there. Are you still recording?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's about all I can tell you on the RAF Wheaton, except of course working in the hospital. And I was very lucky really compared to some of the girls when I was working in the hospital, because the sister used to allow me to come and take patients to the operating theatre, and I was allowed to stay in the theatre, and most of them were hernias and appendix. So I was allowed to, you know, stay there. And I look back now and I wonder how on earth I lifted men of 6 feet from one bed to the other.
Not on your own?
On my own. We used to do it on our own when we were on shift. A bed bath and everything. We used to do all that. But I'll just tell you a couple of funny stories, actually. The first time I ever went on to a man's ward. In those days, girls weren't quite so... They were more innocent than what they are of today. And because parents didn't tell them very much about life. But I remember this. The first time they put me on the ward, and I was washing lockers. And these were all young men, because they were, as I say, young men in the Air Force. And they could see that I was quite inexperienced. So they decided to do something about that. And one of them asked me if I would go and get him a bottle. And because I just went out in the kitchen and I filled a hot water bottle up. But it wasn't that kind of bottle he wanted. But I didn't know anything about men, so of course that was a big joke, because as I say, they were full of fun, obviously.
How did they break it to you? What did they say?
I said, not that kind of bottle, miss. And then another time, this was after I'd been on the ward for quite a while and got used to them all, we had at the end of the ward a solarium, which was for the patients that were recovering, and they used to put beds out there because the sun would shine and it was nice and light. but each side of the door was one a bed. And I was coming through from the solarium, and one patient grabbed one string of my apron. We wore white aprons with it that tied at the back, and one, the other side, tied the other one and tied me each side to the bed and drew three stripes and skull and crossbones on my overall, and the matron walked in. But fortunately for me, they owned up to it being the naughty ones and not me. So that was the sort of funny things that went on, which, as I say, in those days, that was good really, because it made people laugh and that.
What about training, Anne?
I didn't train at all in the hospital. I was just given the job to do, shown how to do it, and then just got on with it, whatever it was. Another time, I was lent from our ward onto another ward, and on this particular ward there was one of them very young who was very ill, and unfortunately it was so ill they put him into a side ward, and he died. Now, I had never seen anyone, any dead body or anything like that in those days. And his parents came, and I was the only one there at the time they walked in, and they were asking me where, you know, about him, and I wasn't allowed to say, and I said, I have to get the sister for you. Anyway, the sister came and took them away. Then finally they came and took him to the mortuary, and the sister called me in, and she was rather a stern, strict sister. And she said to me, carbolize the bed, strip the bed and carbolize it. And I remember picking up the rubber ring and letting the air out of it. And she came in and really shouted at me, because I shouldn't have let the air out of it, just carbolized it as it was. But in the, and because I, it was the only time I think I burst into tears, you know. And then she said, you know, afterwards she was quite kind to me. But those were the sort of things that you came up against that you had never come up against before. So it was just another experience, you know. And the other thing we used to have to do was go and make swabs, which they don't do these days. You used to roll cotton balls into a little ball. We used to have to, those were the... And the other thing, scrub the floors.
On hands and knees,
scrub the floors. And she would come in and inspect, and if she thought something wasn't right, you'd have to do it again, you know. Those sort of things, which was, again, experience.
Was there a matron as well?
Yes, yes. There used to be, during the war, we had VAD nurses, which were Red Cross nurses, like you... You know, the training for VAT,
aid dispatch.
Yeah, and a sister, and that's all you had on the ward. You had medical trained, which were basically nurses, RAF. They wore the same as I did, a white apron and a white turban. We used to have to tie it up here.
So, what was your full uniform?
You just wore the shirt and the tie, and then when you were on duty you wore the white overall, and just the same, your stockings and shoes exactly the same, and then you just took your tunic off and hung it up, but you still wore the same skirt. It's the actual skirt and uniform.
And you still wore a tie?
And you still wore a tie. Even when we were nursing, we still wore ties. Exactly the same, the shirt and the tie. And all we did was have this white overall when you were
working. Different shoes?
No, same shoes, lace-up shoes. And the other thing we used to do, we used to have to clean the ward. And in those days, we used to have to throw dried tea leaves under all the beds to keep the dust down, and then sweep it all up. And then we had what you call bumpers, and they were like a big square, or oblong, I should say, block with felt things underneath. And we used to have, there used to be a certain way that you push them, that they, it was like a swing, made it look like a swing, because the bottom of it attached to the block was movable. It would, and it, once you got it swinging, that was to polish the floor.
Without adding anything like polished liquid or anything?
No, we just, well, they had the floors polished, but we used to have to do that every single day and pull all the beds out and, you know, make sure there wasn't a bit of dust or fluff of any kind.
Do you think the tea leaves worked?
Yes, because they seem to keep the, I think they did it in civilian hospitals in those days as well. But I know, remember doing it in the RAF hospital. And there used to be just the sister in charge, and the VAT nurse was like a staff nurse. And then, of course, they were the medical orderlies, they called them.
So did you have, what were your patients mainly? Were there men who had been injured?
No. Not on that ward, because I was on the surgical ward, which was mainly hernias, mainly, and if anyone had appendicitis, that was the main operations that we did on that ward. Only once, when I was lent to this other ward, it was on the orthopedic ward, and the operation I saw was what men get in their knees. What do they call them? When they injure them playing football. Well, the injury to and I can remember that this, how they did it in those days, they held his leg up in the air, and they bound it very, very tightly and at the top as well, and then they kind of did the op on it. But I was only on that ward about a week, so. But I was mainly on the surgical ward.
Did you ever have to do the bandaging?
No, I didn't have to do that. I used to have to take the temperatures. Morning and evening, whatever shift you were on, because you did shift work, you see. And I used to have to do the bed bathing and that sort of thing, and mainly changing beds, making beds, you know, like mainly what most people do. And we used to have to do the cleaning, whether you was a nurse or not, you did the cleaning. And swabs, emptying bedpans and bottles.
What about sterilising? How did sterilisation take place?
They had, they used to have big sort of chromium electric things, and everything was put into boiling water. Because my father did that when he worked in the London hospital, and that was his job, sterilising all the instruments.
Did you find it a bit embarrassing to start with doing the bed bath?
Very embarrassing. The first patient that I had to do on my own, he could see that I was a bit embarrassed, so he said, if you start at the top and do down the bottom, and I'll do the middle myself. But then, by the time you got round the ward, you were doing it all, because some patients were too ill to do it themselves, so you just got on with it. You didn't, it didn't bother you after that. It's only the initial start because they were mostly young men.
Did you have to roll them over as well?
Yes, yes. And at night time, to stop them from getting bed sores, we used to have to do it with surgical spirit and powder, and rub the bottoms of their back, things like that. That was another job we had to do.
Was a hernia a common problem then, was it?
You'd be surprised how many. My husband's had four. Yes. Yeah, he's had four. He had his first one when he was, before he went in the Air Force, and that one burst in the Air Force. And he was, not when I was there, but he was in RAF Wheaton Hospital with hernia. And they had, that lasted him 16 years. And then he had one in Fulham Hospital on one side. He had three on one side and one on the other. And that lasted the last one he had in St. Thomas's Hospital. They did something to stop it reoccurring. But he has to be very careful about lifting things, and even now, because he's had two other big operations other than that.
Would you say perhaps it's a problem triggered by worry, stress?
Not really. I think lifting, the way that you lift, and men seem to be more weaker that way than ladies. Ladies do get hernias, but I think it's the weakness, is more weakness with a man. That's why they always tell them if they're lifting anything to bend their knees to lift. Yeah. And I think my husband was born with a weakness.
Did you enjoy the nursing?
Very much so. Another thing I used to do, because obviously those men were away from home, and they didn't get, some got visitors, but very few. And I used to go back in the evening sometimes and visit them so that they had someone to talk to, you know. Then, of course, and I used to go dancing in the evening every night that I could.
Did you find they opened up, that they needed to talk?
Sometimes, depended, you know. And of course, as a young woman, you got crushes on them, like most ladies do, you know.
Did they ever ask you to write letters for them?
No, they didn't. But I just used to feel sorry for some, you know, because they used to get a bit unhappy.
Depressed, maybe?
Some, you know. Plus, because of the, in those days, if you had a hernia in those days, 3 weeks in bed, not like it is now. So, you know, that can depress you. I think that's my girl.
Did you find that the running of the wards there was a strictness?
Very much so. Very high discipline. We had a high discipline all through the forces. You, at the time, sometimes you felt, oh gosh, what are they doing this for? But when you look back, that discipline has stayed with you all your life and helped even to bring up your own children because you had the discipline.
What about bed making? Was that, you know, equally strict, the way that it was made?
Exactly the same, where you had to make the bottom like an envelope, exactly the same as in the civilian hospital.
No sitting on beds?
No, weren't allowed to do that. And you had to, before the matron, you had to make sure that the beds were exactly as they should be, all the same.
So matron did her inspection, did she?
Every day there was an inspection, if not her, a senior sister, but mainly the matron. And I really think that if they had that sort of discipline now, it would be a good thing.
Were there any male nurses?
Yes, yes, you had the mail. But very few, because most of them, you see, the men were sent overseas before. There were ladies sent overseas, but mainly the men, it was the men they needed, because they didn't only do the nursing, they'd been trained to use guns and things as well. Because even nowadays, take the Marine Band nowadays, they play instruments, but they also have to do medical work if they're in a situation. Like, say, if they were out in Iraq now, they don't play the band then, they get on with doing the medical work.